Hi, and welcome to Coffee with Claire. In this series, we're going to be talking about tenacity, walking to the beat of your own drum, and wholeheartedly believing in yourself. Have you ever heard the phrase, if you don't know what you believe in, you'll fall for anything? Well, I want you to really think about what you believe in and what your story is. You know, in business, we always have mission statements and we have core values that are given to us to help us know what path to follow. But in your own life, in your personal life, do you have your own mission statement? Do you know what you stand for? Or are you influenced by all of your friends on Facebook? So my challenge for you this week is to really think about what is your story. Share it with us on our Coffee with Claire community on Facebook and let us know what you think. As you know, each week we interview entrepreneurs, people who give back to the community, and people who like to have fun. And this week's guest is no exception. Please give a warm welcome to Steve Stoller. Thanks for being here, Steve.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, Steve is amazing, and I will tell you why. He is a veteran Emmy award-winning television news reporter whose career spanned more than three decades at six television stations in Georgia, Nebraska, North Carolina, and Texas. Steve's assignments ranged from covering Texas politics as a legislative correspondent to serving as an environmental reporter. Steve covered almost every type of news story imaginable, from major disasters including tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes, gas explosions, and oil spills to high-profile murder trials and dramatic hostage situations. He's one of the only journalists in Texas to witness multiple executions. Throughout his career, Steve became an eyewitness to history. He interviewed presidents and governors. He stood on a ladder in Midland, Texas, in the backyard where rescuers pulled toddler Jessica McClure out of a well after 52 hours. He covered the Branch Davidian standoff near Waco, Texas, and he was one of the first reporters on the scene in West Texas after a fertilizer plant exploded. After 34 years in TV, Steve joined the city of Plano, Texas, as a director of media relations. Steve has developed several media training courses and is a highly sought-after speaker at state and national conferences and serves on a variety of nonprofit boards and lives with his wife and kids in Plano, Texas. Wow! That's a lot. That's great, though. I mean, you know, it's pretty exciting to have you on our show. It's such an honor to have somebody that has such tenure in what we're doing here on Coffee with Claire. So I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to be here today.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking with you.
So your book, we've got a book here. It's called Tonight at 10, a TV news reporter's stories behind the stories. And what exactly do you mean by the story behind the stories?
When I got out of the TV news business about 3.5 years ago, I did the math. I was curious how many stories I did in my career. And I came up with about 9,000.
Wow.
And so many stories that I did have a backstory or something that the viewer never saw on the air. And often those stories behind the stories are more interesting and compelling than the story itself. So I went through, I used to keep a calendar, and every day I'd write the story that I did down on a calendar. I had those calendars going back like 20 years.
Wow.
And I went through the calendars, and I tried to come up with about the best 20 stories that have interesting things that happen behind them. So that's what my book's all about.
Well, you know, kind of rewinding a little bit, before you got all of those stories in your repertoire, you had to start somewhere.
Right.
So where did you get your beginnings, and how did you kind of start moving up the ladder of success?
I went to college at a school called Mercer University in Macon, Georgia.
Macon, Georgia.
Right, okay. Before I graduated, I think it was about a month before I graduated, there was a position open for a morning anchor. And what it was is 2 5-minute local news segments during the Today Show.
Oh, wow.
At 7:25 and 8:25. So I went in and I auditioned for the position, and I got it.
Wow, congratulations.
So it paid $4 an hour. I worked 10 hours a week. I made $40 a week. And by 8:30, I was done.
Pretty good gig.
So when I graduated from college, that was my job. And since I was getting hands-on experience in TV news, I didn't want to, you know, leave.
Right.
So they eventually fired their sports director because he was supposed to interview the Speaker of the Georgia House. Mm-hmm. One Saturday, he forgot about it.
Uh-oh.
Speaker of the House showed up.
Oh,
he wasn't
no.
there to interview him. Needless to say, by Monday, he was fired.
Tragedy.
So they actually hired me to do sports, and that was my first job.
Okay.
And then I made a transition into news, and I became the news anchor. So I was there for a year and a half, and we used to joke that WCWB, which were the call letters, stood for We Can't, We're Broke. And then we changed it to Why Compete, We're Beat.
Wow.
I was convinced that it was not only the worst television station in Georgia or the worst television station in the country, I am absolutely sure that it was the worst television station on the planet.
Oh, no. Well, if you're going to be the best at something, I guess.
Two studio cameras. Imagine this. One was a General Electric. One was a Panasonic. The cameras shot you so differently that you could co-anchor a newscast with yourself because you look like two different people.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, you stayed there for about a year and a half, endured and suffered, and then went from...
I wanted out of there pretty bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had spent 5.5 years in the Deep South. I wanted to see the rest of the country. So I sent out 359 resumes.
Wow.
Back then, before the digital age, you sent a resume out, and then the station would request a videotape of
okay.
your work.
Okay.
So I ended up sending out 100 videos.
Wow.
I got 3 job offers. Television station in Savannah, Georgia.
Okay.
Television station in Augusta, Georgia. And a third one in Kearney, Nebraska.
Okay.
Which was the Lincoln, Nebraska market. So I actually went to Nebraska from there.
Wow. Well, at least you got out of the Deep South.
Yeah. And you know, my boss at WCWB said, you can't leave until you pass the test. And I said, well, what's the test? And he said, I'm not going to tell you. I've got to show you.
Okay.
So my very last newscast was at 11 o'clock on a Friday night. My boss had gone home and then came back for my last newscast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm anchoring the news. He's in the studio, and he stands next to the camera. And I'm reading stories live on the air.
Sure.
All of a sudden, I see that he's doing something. I'm not quite sure what he's doing because mm-hmm. I'm still looking at the camera. He turns around, and he unfastens his belt and moons me. While I'm live on the air, I kept my composure, and when we went to commercial, my head just kind of hit the desk in laughter, and he buckled up his pants, walked up to me, put out his hand, shook my hand, and said, congratulations, you've passed the test.
Oh, wow. So the test was that you had to be mooned before you could leave.
Yes.
Wow. Well, that is quite a story. Is that in your book?
That is one of the first chapter. And the name of that chapter is We Can't, We're Broke.
Oh, okay. Well, do you have a favorite out of all of these, or maybe even one that,
yes.
that you know, so tell
one,
us about
one
that
one. Story really stands out. I got a call from a woman in Richardson, total stranger, and she said, I don't know if you can help me or not. My son is an R&B singer, and he has cancer. Mm. It's terminal. He has a very short time left. His last wish was to meet B.B. King. She said that she talked to B.B. King's manager. She made the entire thing happen. And it was when B.B. King was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow.
The singer, his name was Gary Blakey, and his wife went to Cleveland. When they got to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, security stopped them and said, we don't know anything about this at all. We can't let you backstage. Well, he wasn't well.
Yeah.
He was dying.
Right.
So him and his wife just turned around, got in a cab, flew back to Dallas. His mother said, is there anything you can do to make it happen?
Mm-hmm.
I said, I don't even know where to start. I said, why don't you give me the phone number for the manager? So I called the manager and I said, I don't want to talk about what happened in Cleveland. Is there any way we can do this somewhere else? And he said, well, BB's going to be down in Gulfport, Mississippi, performing at the Grand Resort and Casino.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get Gary there, you have my word, I'll make it happen.
Wow.
I called the Grand Casino. I talked to their PR director. She fell in love with the idea. I called Southwest Airlines. They mm-hmm. comped airfare for Gary and his wife. We went down there. We went into a room. B.B. King walked in, and they sat and had a beautiful conversation for about a half hour. In the middle of the conversation, Gary turns around, and he looks at me and says, I can't believe I'm sitting here talking to B.B. King like he's my next door neighbor. So then we went into the concert, and in the middle of the show, B.B. King, in between songs, said, "Ladies and gentlemen, we have a special guest here with us tonight. His name is Gary. He's from Dallas, and Gary is sick." He says, "Gary, I want to tell you something that I've been saying my whole life. Ain't nothing over until it's over, and don't you forget that." Mm-hmm. And he had asked Gary what song he wanted, if there was a particular song that he would like to hear. And Gary said, "Boy, my band performs The Thrill Is Gone, and I'd be so honored if you could play that." Well, that was B.B. King's signature song.
Yeah,
he, you know, when
right.
he was alive, he was going to play that every concert he performed. So right after he addressed Gary, he started playing
the first licks.
Yeah, it was a really very emotional. But that's my favorite story. And ironically, about 3 weeks later, Gary passed away. Just a few weeks after Gary passed away, I was diagnosed with cancer.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the medical reporter at Channel 4, his name was John Hammerly, he approached me on the day I was diagnosed and said, "We have a really unique opportunity here. We have the ability to follow a cancer patient from the day of diagnosis through treatment to whatever the outcome is. Mm-hmm. Are you in?"
Wow.
Now, at the same time I was diagnosed, my wife was 8 months pregnant with our second child.
Oh, okay. So,
the timing was kind of crazy. Yeah, but actually, everything worked out perfectly. And I thought of all the people. I actually had a lymph node that was cancerous that was deep in my armpit, and it felt like a golf ball. So I started thinking, how many other people? I blew it off for like 3.5 months, because otherwise I felt fine.
Yeah.
I actually went to my doctor for a sinus infection, mm-hmm. and while I was in the doctor's office, I was having this debate about whether I should show him this thing. Finally, I said, "Doc, feel this." When he felt it, his entire personality changed. But I wondered, how many people are walking around with things like this mm-hmm. and aren't addressing it?
Yeah, because it's not bothering them, right?
Right. So I thought, if one person can be influenced by this series of stories that was
right.
called the Cancer Chronicles,
yes.
and they went to the doctor and they found out it was nothing, we've given that person peace of mind,
mm-hmm.
and we've accomplished something. That's all it took. On the other side of the spectrum, if somebody went to the doctor and found out they have cancer, and we helped them catch it early, then we may have contributed to saving that person's life.
Absolutely.
So I said, "I am so in." And it was incredible. I started getting wow. letters from the viewers. I got about 200 letters. And these letters were heartfelt and compassionate. And it was a wonderful thing. My biggest support group was a group of total strangers that I had never met.
Wow.
Yeah.
But they felt like they knew you because you had been in their home every
right,
day.
Right, absolutely.
So, you know, and I think that's one of the things that's amazing about, you know, what your career path was, is that, you know, you've influenced people you don't even know, you know, just by being there and being steady in their lives every day. You know, it's just, I think it's kind of like being a teacher. You know, sometimes a teacher is the only steady adult in a kid's life. Well, you could have been the only steady, you know, adult in somebody else's life, just because maybe they were homebound, or, you know, they didn't have a lot of friends, but you were their friend. So it's just kind of it's a big responsibility to be a personality, and how brave of you to open up your whole self, your soul, your family life, what's going on internally, to everybody to see.
Yeah, it was such a noble mission, you know. For me, it really felt like it was the easiest thing in the world. You know, what was amazing is a lot of the letters I got were from cancer survivors. And I could tell by what they wrote that they could see themselves in me and what I was going through. And I would read these letters and I would just weep. I mean, tears would roll down my face because it's like these people get it.
Oh, yeah.
They understand. They've been there. One of them came from a 19-year-old girl who was a UNT student. And it was the first story when I'm going for my first chemo treatment and they're telling me all the possible side effects from the 4 chemo drugs they're giving me. And I was pretty down. It's pretty
sure.
upsetting. This one drug I was taking is so powerful that if it leaks out beyond your vein, it can cause tissue damage.
Oh.
Another one they gave me, they said, "Well, in a certain small number of patients, this drug can cause leukemia." I said, "Wait a minute. You're giving me a drug that can cause another type
cancer,
of cancer
right?
that I don't have?" So this girl from UNT wrote, you know, I saw the story the other night and you looked pretty gloomy. She said, just know that one day, in a very short period of time down the road, you'll look back at all this and you'll laugh because you'll realize just how bad it could have been.
Oh my gosh.
And in retrospect, yes, I mean, such wisdom. Yeah. And she was so right. She was so right.
Yeah. So can you laugh about it now?
Yeah. Because, you know, I really saw some people suffer, and my suffering compared to what I saw was very minimal.
Well, you know, you've done so much in your 34 years, and I know that in even the past 5 years, I can tell that things have changed a lot from, I'm sure, when you started your career versus, you know, where we are now. So tell the audience a little bit about some of the major changes that you've seen, and maybe even your opinion of it. Is it better?
Sure.
Is it not as good? I don't know.
TV news is not the same business that it was just 5 years ago. And really, there's a lot of reasons. I mean, corporate America is no different. Companies are shrinking and doing more with less.
Sure.
Television news, television stations are no different. Also, the advent of the smartphone and social media. Those two things have also a very, very big influence. Before I left Channel 8, we had a new news director, and we had a staff meeting. And the very first staff meeting, I'll never forget what she said. She pulled her smartphone out, and she said, listen, folks, like it or not, this is how people get their news today. Mm. And our challenge as a newsroom is to try to engage people on the cell phone so that they'll even want to watch our newscast at 5, 6, and 10.
Wow.
And she was right. She was right.
Yeah.
And she said, not all of you are going to want to take this journey with us. You know, there were a lot of older, experienced reporters in our newsroom. And, you know, some people didn't embrace social media. I did, because I just felt like this is the future. Mm-hmm. This is where the business is going. So the first thing I do is I started a Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that, I had 5,000 friends.
Wow.
Yeah, I reached my limit on my personal page. So I started another one, Steven Stoller, instead of Steve. And then that page quickly got about 4,000 friends on there. So I already had 9,000 people on Facebook, and I thought, wow, what a great way to let them know what I'm working on.
Yeah.
And tell them, you know, little bits and pieces of my story to try and encourage them to watch the newscasts. Twitter, same thing. I started a Twitter page, had about 4,000 followers. So I really saw the benefits of social media, but there is another side of social media. Everyone who has a phone now is a journalist. You know,
yeah.
We walk amongst thousands and thousands of citizen journalists, which is a good thing in terms of getting news and getting it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The negative thing about it is a lot of times the information we get is often wrong. And a lot of times it's so competitive between the television stations that information is being used on the air, especially during big breaking news stories, that hasn't been thoroughly vetted.
Yeah.
And the information that's going out to the viewers is not accurate. Anytime there's a huge news story, you can watch and see it.
So as a viewer, how do we discern where the valid resources are? If something's late, you know, breaking news, do we kind of take a step back and wait till the dust settles a little bit before we make up our minds? Or?
Well, I think that's good advice, but you know, we're in a society where we want everything 5 minutes ago,
right,
instead of now.
Thank you, McDonald's.
Yeah, so I think you just got to go with, you know, who you feel has the most credibility. You know, I still think the major networks and their news operations do a great job covering the news, you know, and that's a really good place to go. And, you know, local stations, same thing. It's so competitive.
So, you know, we've mentioned a lot of different age ranges, and I'm really interested in students and helping them, you know, develop their careers. If we had some young journalist students that are watching our show, what kind of advice would you give them to even get into any kind of media, whether it be written like in newspapers or, you know, what you've done on the camera? I guess you wrote and produced shows, right? So you did,
Yeah.
did both sides of the
camera.
I've
done everything in the business. I just went to an awards presentation at the Mayborn School of Journalism at the University of North Texas, and I was so encouraged by these students and these young people, because they really have great pride in the craft of journalism.
Awesome.
And right now, it's a very, very difficult time to be a journalist. There's just so much discord, especially in Washington, between the media and the government. Mm-hmm. So these kids, I really just felt so encouraged to see how excited they are and how hopeful they are. It's a craft. It really is. And I think the best advice is just to stay true to your beliefs, you know, and understand what journalism is all about and how important it is to our nation. You know, this nation was founded on a free press.
Right.
And that's something that, to me, as a former journalist, is sacred. So I'm, you know, I'm hoping that the discord will dissolve eventually, and that the relationship between the media and the government will smooth out and be a little more civil. Because what I've seen recently is just unlike anything I've ever seen.
I think it's like war
has been declared on the media, and the media is part of what keeps us a free society. The media was designed to hold the government accountable for what they do. It's part of the checks and balances. So it plays a very important role.
So, you know, the freedom of speech and the freedom, you know, to be able to write what we want to write, it really is an American thing. You know, it really is something that we have prided ourselves on really grown our whole country from. And, you know, speaking of the press here, we happen to have a book here that we'd like to tell everybody about. So how can everybody get a copy of Tonight at 10, a TV news reporter's stories behind the stories?
Well, I have a website, and it's stevestoller.com. And it's also available through distributors like amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, which is bn.com.
Awesome.
It's also available in Nook iBooks, and I forgot what the other one's
Kindle?
Called.
Kindle. So everybody has an opportunity to read your book.
Yes.
So go get it. All right. Well, Steve, thank you so much for being here today. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Claire.
You're
thank
welcome.
You.
So today with Steve, we're going to play a game called Questions, because I thought that'd be appropriate since he's a reporter. And in this game, every time we say a statement, it's not a statement at all. It's actually a question. And so our responsibility is to keep the scene going by asking each other questions. And a lot of times this game can be played as an elimination game, but we're not going to be eliminating each other. We're going to be supporting each other. And if we get stuck, we'll just start a new sentence. So from the audience, I need to get a suggestion of a destination that we might go on for vacation. The Caribbean. All right. So the Caribbean is our suggestion. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Yes. All right. Okay. So have you packed your bags yet?
Have you packed your bags?
Yes, and I'm planning on bringing our poodle Poochie.
Have
oh,
you?
I didn't even ask a question.
She blew it.
All right. Yes,
I blew
and
it on the first word, though.
Yes, and is it okay if I bring our poodle Poochie?
Of course. Is it okay if I bring my three dogs?
Yes, and I've been wondering if you got all of their shots. Have you got all their shots?
Are we supposed to answer before we ask another question, or just respond with another question?
Just respond with another question, and you were actually asking another question, which was perfect. So, are you okay answering questions with a question?
Are you okay if I don't?
Do I look like that I'm okay with that?
Do you see in me whether or not I accept that you're okay with it?
Good job. This is not as easy as we make it look, folks.
It's not easy at all.
Well, thank you, Steve. I had a blast having you on our show today. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Tony, my first question is, we are all so busy. How do you balance fun with responsibility at work?
Well, honestly, I don't balance the two, and here's why. Okay. I quit working about 30 years ago.
Oh, well, lucky you.
I don't like to work. I like to play. So what I do is I go play, and that way I don't have to balance between work and play. I just play all the time.
Awesome. So you are an entrepreneur, and you've been busy growing your business. So what are the fun things or aspects about growing a business?
Well, you know, the spontaneity of it. You got to be flexible enough to adjust to, you know, the circumstances and the situation and mm-hmm. customize it to each experience like it's a unique thing. So you can't just cut and dry say this is how it is. So
right.
you have to adjust and modify. So adjusting is a part of the thing about fun.
That's true.
You gotta be able to adjust on the fly.
Just like improv. So how do you encourage others to have fun at work?
Well, to create their job, their position new every day. So like if you go in and you create it like it's a brand new experience every day, mm-hmm. then you get to go in and experience it as new and it's more fun. If it, you know, it's the same old thing every day, then that gets old.
Yeah, so. You get bored and then you know, you're not as
productive.
So what advice would you give someone that might be struggling right now as to how to keep it fun?
Well, be light. Don't take everything so
serious.
Be light.
Okay.
You know, don't take everything so serious. It's not always going to go your way, and it's not always going to go against you. So,
right.
you know, just be light. Don't take
be flexible.
So serious. Be flexible.
Yeah.
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about your business.
Well, I'm with a company called NLP Learning Systems mm-hmm. Corporation, and we're a self-improvement company, basically.
Right.
We specialize in a variety of trainings for the public and for corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing that almost 30 years now.
So that's your play.
That's my play.
Awesome.
That's correct.
All right, so Tony, if you were to have a happy dance or a happy stance, what would that look like? Oh, there you go. Woo-hoo! So remember, your challenge for this week is to identify your story. What do you stand for? And share with us your story on our Coffee with Claire community on Facebook. And as always, remember, follow the fun. See you next time.